What's up, everybody? It's Doug with Mojo Break Media and MojoBreak.com. We're excited to bring you another Mojo Sessions, and I have the pleasure to be joined by Evan Vandenberg from Dibs.io. Dibs is the world's first 24/7 spot market for instantly trading fractional interests and collectibles. The Dibs platform allows customers to buy, sell, and trade fractions of collectible assets from any connected device with just a few clicks. And I got on that thing last night, and it was a lot of fun, guys. I got to tell you, I grabbed some fractional interests in Mike Trout, in Curry, in Luka, and I already seen some returns, which is a lot of fun. And the best thing is you can do it anytime. You can buy a stake in the whole collection of the cards they have of certain players on there, and it's attached to a real physical card, so it's combining the best of both worlds. And we have a great interview for you guys, and we also have a way to get a free frack pack from Dibs. If you use code MOJOBREAK when signing up, that will unlock your free frack pack. Now you're like, what's a frack pack? Well, you got to listen in on the interview to find out what it is. It's a fascinating way to open up a pack on their marketplace. And the app is amazing. It's very smooth, and they're constantly adding new cards in. And, you know, it's just a fun thing to join in and watch what the trading is going on, and everything is transparent on their website. So we talked about a lot of things. We talked about NFTs. We talked about Steph Curry. So without further ado, here it is. What's up, guys? We're joined by Evan Vandenberg from Dibs.io. It's the fractional sports card marketplace, which ties in the digital world and the real world as far as sports cards. So we're excited to be joined by Evan. And Evan, let's talk about how you came up with the idea for Dibs and what inspired you to get this thing started.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, first and foremost, thanks for having me on, guys. This is always fun. So yeah, you know, what started Dibs, right? You know, just quick background, and frankly, I don't want to dwell on it too much because it's all changed, but was in the digital item trading space for a long time, skins, all these kind of PC game items, then helped launch the Wax blockchain, brought in, you know, Tops and some other big collectible IPs. And so we kind of had this inkling, and frankly, man, what started Dibs was obviously like we had seen a lot in this digital world and felt like there was a big market opportunity. Why I don't want to dwell on is I just feel like everything changed so much, right? Like 2 years ago, I couldn't have told you what the last 18 months were going to look like, right? And I think there's just been this incredible like societal accelerant towards digital ownership, right? And like we had felt that way and felt like the puck was kind of going in that direction. And then all of a sudden, it just took fire, right? Like, you know, way after we had started thinking about this idea, the card market, you know, kind of simultaneously boomed with the NFT market. Not sure how much correlation there was, but you know, I think this shift, right, of everybody being locked in the four walls of their house for, you know, God, depending on where you're at, you know, for months, right? And I think it made everybody kind of take a look at, you know, the ways that we do things, right? And the things that are just literally sitting in plain sight, like how many people you guys have talked to that finally opened up like the box cards and were like, yo, these things like represent me or these passions of mine, right? And I think everybody, you know, kind of needed this new way of interacting with this stuff, right? There was no card shows. There was not, you know, all this other stuff going on. And I think, frankly, man, it was this incredible, you know, societal boom, you know, whether you like it or not, right? It was just kind of this inevitable shift in course to see people really take these things digitally, right? And now all of a sudden, people are very open to owning, you know, whether it's NFTs or crypto or cards, right? I mean, a lot of people are vaulting them. Like the possession ownership has been, you know, pretty well segmented. And I think people are okay with that. And I think this digital world is becoming extremely valuable, right? The way that people represent themselves, the way they can interact is so powerful and it's so different, right? I mean, you guys touch tens of thousands of people, right, with your content. And I think that there's this shift towards this digital kind of persona and who you are there, not that it's a different person necessarily, but the way that you represent that. And so I think, you know, where Dibs started and the ideas of, you know, fractionalizing things and making things more accessible and cost effective, I think it's not that that's gone, but I think it's also shifted. And I think it's evolved into a much more comprehensive, you know, solution of like, wait, let's take these cool things, physical things that people care about, like cards, and let's give them a meaningful way to interact with those things in this kind of digital world as well.
Yeah. And then go ahead and explain the process of how somebody, I mean, there's obviously a real card attached to it that's housed by you guys. So how do you guys decide on how many different NFT tokens are attached to that card?
Yeah, so I'll make it really simple. Let's just take one card, for example, any card behind me, right? You send that into Dibs, so you send it to our vault. That thing gets scanned. We get all the kind of metadata or data around that card. That, you know, we only take graded cards, just as a clarifying point. So everything pertinent about that card, and essentially the NFT is really in many respects like a warehouse receipt, right? And it's good to be returned, and we will ship that to you physically. We do it all the time. People buy out cards on the platform. But what we're doing is we're taking physical cards. We create this, you know, warehouse receipt in the form of an NFT where you do have the imagery and everything else. And then we fractionalize that using smart contracts so that you can buy, you know, almost infinitesimally small pieces in a live marketplace. So, and in terms of your other question about number of tokens and things, it's really, it's a one-to-one representation with an NFT. It's a unique thing. So it's more simplistic. And then the fungible kind of elements of it are again, one-to-one, right? So one token, one NFT.
Definitely. Now, I was messing around with your guys' app, and it is very smooth. I mean, it was, you know, not clunky at all. It was just real quick to get my deposit in there and go ahead and just jump in on the action. And this was like, I was doing this at like 11:30 last night, and my account got approved. I mean, you guys must have people working 24/7. It was incredible. So tell us the challenge of creating that website and what was the, or creating the app, and what was the vision for the app?
Yeah, I mean, so the challenge is creating the app, right? I mean, there's all sorts of stuff, right? There wasn't a whole lot to, I mean, there were things to look at and kind of emulate, but like for us, we really want to kind of like start from scratch. Like, what would this look like? And again, I think we're where it's going is different than where it is today. You know, challenges of building technology. I mean, frankly, man, we've got a really strong engineering team. I mean, the core, you know, kind of team that built Dibs is really well-versed in kind of mobile web back-end engineering. So I would actually say, like, on the technical side, that's a huge strength of the company. Sure. I think, you know, where the challenges in lied are really with fintech and banking and KYC, AML, all that stuff, right? I would say they're kind of behind the front end, and it's always that way, but it's improving rapidly, right? Like, we're making some shifts now that are going to make it a far easier process with less requirements. But I would say that honestly was more of a issue than the building of the application itself. You know, some of the other interesting kind of challenges where, you know, you have small markets, right? Like, these things aren't, this isn't Amazon, right? And so to make a meaningful market, you know, how do you create an order book that's effective and efficient and relatively liquid, right? So I think those were the challenges kind of around that side. And yeah, so hopefully that answers that question.
Was it hard to find a banking partner that was as forward thinking? Did it take some time to find that institution that would kind of understand what you guys were doing and get in line with that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So yes, in the sense of it was limited, right? There was only like when we first started, it was really limited. I would say that there has been some insane improvements across the board in that space. I mean, you look at Jack Dorsey, some of these guys from like PayPal, it's only a matter of time until this stuff becomes really simplistic, right?
Sure.
But when we were like trying to put it all together, right? No, there was only a few options. You know, they were startups too, right? And they're trying to figure out their stuff. And, you know, there's been a lot of like collaborating, and I would honestly say like us even building things for them, right? Like, things they didn't even know they needed and vice versa. I'm sure we learned things from them, but yeah, it was a learning process, and now it's maturing. And that's what I like love. And a lot of the heavy lifting for the last couple of months has been, okay, like, how do we build the core infrastructure underneath this app, right, to be like world-class going forward? And I'd say that stuff's coming out here in the very, very near term. And it's there to grow, right? It's like, okay, now you can take crypto. Now you can do all sorts of different stuff. You don't have to go through as, you know, you were very kind about the not being clunky. We still, it's a tough funnel, right? You know, people don't want to share all that information. They're kind of wondering why. But I think it's getting better and it's streamlining.
Absolutely. Now, just to kind of explain it in layman. So say I buy $200 on a Luka Prism PSA 10, right? And I'm like, you know what? Luka had a big game. Looks like the market went up. Am I able to just sell that right away? Or is there like limitations on that?
No. So it's, you know, again, the limitations would be like the orders, right? I mean, is there a buyer and a seller on the other side? You know, there's an AMM kind of algorithmic liquidity pool there that's just math-based, but it helps. But no, to answer your question, it's 24/7 live, right? When we kick something into a real market, it's peer-to-peer. So you can go ahead and like, yeah, Luka's having a great quarter. I'm buying in on Luka, or you think he's, you know, on pace to be MVP, and you have some moment of epiphany about, you know, whoever it may be, right? And we've got a pretty wide selection of players, right? It's not just the top 10 guys and girls. So yeah, no, to answer your question, it's real time.
Have you noticed that, sorry, Doug, to interrupt you. Early phase of this, have you noticed people more often having a buy and hold strategy within your app, or are there people in their day, like with a day trading strategy? Like, kind of when you said that, it made me think, like, are people literally trading fractions of a share of these cards in the moment as these people are either succeeding or failing, right?
Yeah, it's a great question. And like, it's actually like, it's not a complicated answer, but it's a multiple, you know, we've been doing a ton of user interviews, and that's why like, I can give you actually a pretty clear picture here. Like, I think we've done something like 75 to 100 in the last month, where we actually just literally get on Zoom and chat to people, like chat with people about like, hey, what do you like? What do you not like? How are you using the thing? Mm-hmm. So I would say, you get both, right? I would even say there's probably like three tiers of the way I would book it, right? You have some people who are trading all day, right? Like they're buying little nibbles here, buying little nibbles there. They have some insight of, you know, hey, this team's got an easy schedule for the next couple of weeks. And the card market, whether you like it or not, does fluctuate based on player performance, right? It just does. It's not perfectly correlated, but it does correlate strongly. And then we have people who just come in, they want to buy Tom Brady and they want to hold it. And, you know, they'll check back in 6 months. I mean, that's a timeless piece, right? Sure. And I would say it's a sizable chunk. And then you also have like just the fans, right? Like the people who are like, I'm the Steph Curry guy and I want a way to like show that I'm like the Warriors fanboy, right? And I want to show that like I have the thought, you know, the wherewithal and the passion, and like, this is how I think, you know, how I want to represent myself. So you kind of have this mix, right? Which has been interesting to see develop, right? You know, you have hypotheses in the beginning, and to see it kind of play out this way is good. And I think it's healthy to have multiple types, right? I mean, if it was all just everybody going constantly all day, every day, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I think it's cool to have, I agree with you. I think it's really important, especially in something like this, to have folks that are, like you just said, like true fans of sports and true fans of these players, to sort of keep that community alive. And then you're going to have your more transactional folks that are just going to trade in anything that can be traded, because they're more, you know, they're just like crypto or anything else. It's interesting.
No, and so it's probably similar to like what you guys see, right? There's a flipper culture for sure, right? I mean, you guys understand that. And then there's the massive hoarding, like guys who are going to, this is like an inheritance for their kids kind of thing, right? So I think it just gets played out on steroids in more real time, right? And you get to see it live, at least from our seat. But it's probably relatively similar.
That's cool.
So what's the minimum someone could buy, and what's the maximum somebody could buy of one card?
Really, no, there's no theoretical maximum. Minimum, I think right now we're doing dollar buys. So, you know, realistically, there's nothing stopping us from doing sub $1. It just becomes a little messy and kind of annoying. And so $1 just sounds like a reasonably, you know, small increment that anybody could get in at. And that's really part of the thesis, right? Is like, if we're doing this, we're digitizing things, we're bringing it into this new world, like, part of that is bringing in this whole new wave of or generation and just type of collector, right? Like, I can get in with a dollar, man. Like, I love this card and this is the thing that I believe in. And yeah, I don't have $10,000 to buy this, you know, one of one Pat Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, you know, card, the PSA 10. But I have a dollar or $5 and I want to have that thing. I want to be able to show it. I want to be able to like interact with people. And I think that's kind of the evolution of where this thing's going, is really making that communal, right? Trying to do really interesting things. You know, when you tokenize something and you create this digital version of it, there's a lot you can do, right? It sounds like, oh, you can transact it, but like there's more to it. It can give you access to different communities. Like, maybe there's the Pat Mahomes channel, right? Or whatever it may be. Or we have a party in New York and, you know, kind of, you saw what was going on with like the Bored Ape Yacht Club and all this stuff. There are things that you can do that is really, I think, that are really impactful in terms of like bringing the community together in a meaningful way, you know, both in real life, online communities, and just totally different way to like showcase these things that I think you're going to see coming down the pipeline.
Now, you mentioned that you could do like a buyout on certain cards. And I think I read on the website that there was sometimes there could be a 12-month period, as the card's probably new and everybody has a chance to buy it. Now, if I decide like, hey, you know, that $10,000 Steph Curry, I want to just buy it now. Do the people that own it at the time, do they have a choice of saying, no, I don't want to sell it? Or is it just, it's just bought out?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I actually want to pose a question to you guys after, because it's something that we're working on right now. But so the way it works today, if there are more than one of one card, right? So if we have 10 Patrick Mahomes, whatever card, you know, PSA 10, they're all the exact same grade, same SKU, everything. Then what would happen is you accumulate one full token, and that's yours. You can take it, you can do whatever the hell you want with it. Shortly here, you can take it to another blockchain ecosystem, take it to OpenSea, you know, Wax Marketplace, wherever you want to take it to. So that's in the case if we have multiples. In the case of one-of-ones, you have to accumulate a simple majority, and then you can execute a buyout, which is essentially paying a premium on the rolling day. You know, it's there's a math formula that's listed there, but I think it's 90-day VWAP. And essentially, you're paying a premium on what the highest price is, right? If we're just simplifying it. But what I think is going to be interesting, and what I think is the kind of next phase of that, right? Because we get tons of buyout requests, right? And I'm like, and you see it on other platforms. It really is a fun thing, right? Like, and I think it's a question of there's kind of two routes you can go. There's the voting thing that's more, I think, kind of standardized, where okay, I have 10%, then my vote counts for 10%. You know, if Dibs owns anything, we would abstain from any sort of vote, and just whatever the people choose is what happens. There's a vote, right, system. And then the other thing would be like an auction. So like, hey, if you want to man up and buy this thing off, then fine. You have to, the minimum price, like the floor price or reserve price or whatever is going to be the same kind of premium. You got to pay at least, you know, get people at least what the card's worth. Sure. But then, you know, you might say, okay, well, that guy just executed a buyout because he owned 10%. And then he wanted to, you know, buy the thing out for $12,000 and it's trading at 10. But then you could step in and be like, I'll do 12.5 or 13, right? Because I think it's actually still a good buy. And then all of a sudden you have a gamification around it. And not even gamification, but it almost seems there's two schools of thought, right? Maybe you combine the two to allow an auction to start. But I think that's the only fair and reasonable way to do it, right? And we would obviously stay out of that entirely. And that's it's to let, you know, whoever wants to come in and do that, make their play.
That's very interesting.
So there's no minimum divisible amount for each card. So the person putting their card in sets the price, or it's valued based on the market, but there's no maximum amount of divisions that card can be bought in at.
So theoretically, yes, there is. It's 18 places past a zero, but
okay, fair. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, it's a lot.
Essentially, no.
Right.
Yeah. But like, so mathematically there is, but for the sake of conversation, no. I mean, the way we've done it is it's not like a set share amount, right? There's not 100. There's not 100 pieces of representing each card. It can be, and that helps for a lot of reasons. I mean, you see like in even traditional markets, right? I mean, you've seen Schwab, I think it's like slices or something like that, right? There's a lot more liquidity that can be provided, especially on a smaller market where you really want to have an optionality of like, hey, you know what? Like I have $6 of this thing. I want to get rid of it. You can sell $6 instead of, you know, maybe it has to be 50 on other places.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Interesting.
Definitely interesting. And I mean, in terms of I think you guys have got your data from Card Ladder, which I believe pulls from eBay, correct? And that's the price that gets set at. I don't want to speak out of turn here, but that's what
I was kind of thinking about as well.
Yeah. So when you guys initially put your drop, and let's just say it's at, you know, whatever the market was at that point, let's just say it was $16,000. If the card goes down on eBay but shows more interest in your marketplace, does it rise past maybe current comps on eBay, or does it stay with what the market determines?
Yeah, so
that made sense.
Yeah, no, it's just a fair amount to unpack, right? To be transparent on that. So we In general, like we are moving and have been, but like we really want to move to a full like consignment model where it's you, like you send your cards in, perfect. You set the price. If no one wants to buy it, then, you know, you clearly overpriced it. Sure. And so we don't use Card Ladder data necessarily to price anything that we're putting out there. We give that data to give people like a sense, like a semblance of what is, you know, a comp out there, right?
Got because you. Okay.
We, you know, there's novice people in here. There's other people who have no clue what they're doing. There's some people who are extremely, you know, intelligent, right? Who spend their life doing this stuff. We felt like the more data that we could provide externally and to give people a relative comp was just, it was really important. You know, we saw it was the learning from the beginning of the platform where we didn't have access to any data sources. No one was like helping us out on that. And we were, you know, you would just see people making what I would think is just relatively uneducated decisions, right? And that's their discredit, but like maybe they're just like, I'm just gonna, you know, ape into
emotional
this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, okay, fine, you can do that, right? But like, please know that like the last 30 days, there's been 20 sales of this card and it's been around this, you know, here's the chart of
sure.
it.
Sure.
So at least you have that. But to answer your last kind of later piece of the question, does it get maxed out at like what was the last sale on eBay? And I would say the answer is no. I think in general, our cards trade at a slight premium, frankly. Mm-hmm. Some are, there's deltas both ways, right? Like there's cars on the platform, they're 30% below the last eBay sale. And I think where that market becomes more efficient and more fun is really when the two-sided, you know, user generated, customer generated cards, right? So if I say, hey, look, that thing's, you know, I had bought that thing for $800. It's up at 2000. Like, I'll take that. I'll sell it at dibs all day, you know, even if I want to sell a fraction of it or whatever. And that's how you really start to create a healthy dynamic, right? In any market, like it just needs that. And so I think that's a humongous focus and something you're going to just see probably be the main focus for the next couple of months is like, how do we make that the best selling process ever? You know, it's as good as we can possibly make it and make that customer service experience awesome. I think that's the ultimate.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I could definitely see maybe like, you know, maybe there's some more John Morant fans on your guys' marketplace. And let's say John Morant goes out for the year and his eBay cards are trending down, but you guys have so many more John Morant users that are like, no, you know, I want to double down on John Morant. Now he's out. You can maybe see a swing in your marketplace being worth more on that specific player, you know, compared to what the market is, which is that. Pretty fascinating in a way, and it may, like you said, it may swing the other way if maybe a new guy like a Tyrese Maxey comes in and you guys start having his cards on there. Maybe there's not a lot of users, right? So then it's a, that seems like it's a deal. So it's a very interesting dynamic.
Well, I think having a slight competition or disparity between the two markets just drives people to both markets. It's just it's a good, healthy dynamic, to your point, Evan, for both. Because if it was just directly off of what eBay was focused on and it was just one for one all the time, it wouldn't give people this sense of like, oh, I can maybe come up on a really good score, which is sort of like the heart of what a lot of this is about, right? For many folks.
Yeah. I think it creates, you know, another counterpoint, right? It's another, you know, the concepts of arbitrage and all these other things, right? Like having more healthy markets tends to be good. And easier ways to get in, right? I mean, the thing with eBay or any pack, ship, sell marketplace is there's a time delay, right? And between me sending that thing to you, maybe it's 14 days, right? And that 14 days, John Morant, you know, I would never wish this upon him. I love the guy, but, you know, a terrible injury, right? And then all of a sudden it's like, well, crap. And I think, you know, having the real-time nature of it all is something special.
Definitely. Well, I'm very interested because, you know, we do breaks and we've been doing breaks for 10 years. I'm fascinated by the Frack Pack, and I opened one last night and it was super exciting. So tell us a little bit more about the Frack Pack and how those work.
Yeah, I mean, it ties completely back to the core of what this hobby is built on, right? Which is this kind of experience of getting to open up a pack or a hobby box, whatever that, you know, whatever your budget allows. I mean, for me, right? Like, and I'm sure you guys, like, I still get such a joy out of it. And it's like, even when I know the cars aren't mine, like I'll go with like big collectors and they'll buy a box. I'm just ribbing for them, right? Cause like, it's just like a little kid in me that just loves that, right? And I think it's so, you know, quintessential to the hobby. But essentially what we did is we tied the best of our business with this thing that we know is awesome, right? Which is pack opening, this chance experience. So by and large, we've been, you know, just giving them out as kind of like a token of appreciation. But yeah, when you open up a card, you could get, you know, 1% of a Tom Brady rookie and 1% of a LeBron James, you know, cracked ice or whatever it may be, right? And like, or, you know, and at some point maybe we start to sell those things. I mean, there's different considerations that need to be made there, but we really just wanted to like recreate a lot of the core kind of hobby experiences.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely exciting. I got like Drew Brees, and I think it already went up a certain percentage. So I was like looking at it today. I was like, wow, it already went up overnight. That's awesome. So, and then, you know, it makes me definitely want to open more, as you said, that the joy of opening up packs and being able to do that digitally and then have it tied in with real cards is very cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. I mean, just to tie back to stuff that you guys do as well is like, we did one sale of them, right? A limited one, just to, like see what happened. I think it sold out in like 9 seconds and there was like 300 people in queue. So I was like, you know, clearly people love that, but you know, we got to make sure everything checks out and, you know, you dot your I's and cross your T's.
I was going to say, how do you kind of make that transparent? Do you come out with a checklist ahead of time of what's going to be in each pack?
Yeah. Yeah. And the nice thing about what we do, right, with blockchain technology and just everything being digital is like, we would just publish it. We wouldn't even come out on that particular thing. Right. We just wanted to like get it out there. But going forward, if we were ever to do that, everything would be public, you know, verifiable. You can go check the code, at least check the odds and see exactly what's in the pack, right? So, you know, with certainty that you're getting one of these things at this percentage or that percentage. but you don't know which one, right? And that's how the whole kind of, you know, the fun of pack opening.
Yep, definitely. Now, are you guys selective? I mean, you obviously have your list of guys, and whoever it's doing the best is number one. Are you guys selective on who you bring in as far as players? Is there a certain criteria you're looking for?
So, you know, in the beginning, it was more so, right? I mean, we're trying to seed the platform, you know, make sure we had like the preeminent, most traded cards, right? All that sort of stuff. Where we want this to go is if you've got a graded card, and the reason that we focus on that grading piece, at least for the time being, is like, I cannot live with like somebody getting a fraudulent thing, right?
Right.
And it's just too much risk if we were to do something else. But we want it to be like, hey, man, if you got a PSA 10, a 9, 8, 9, 10, I think we're going to try to keep it in that range, you know, for the time being, bring it on. And eventually, you know, we'll have a more full-fledged kind of like actual market as opposed to everything being fractionalized. Right now, you know, what that selection process looks like. I mean, recently we've just been trying to like, you know, we've got all these cards vaulted. It's been a matter of like, how do you kind of push that out? And just trying to be a little bit current with the moment, you know, and over time, I think we just want it to be whatever you, the consumer, you know, and the collector wants, put it up, you know, and if people want that, great. If they don't, then it's still yours. You'll ship it back to you, or you keep some of it and you sell some of it, right? So we really do want it to become a little bit less selective.
Sure.
Is there a difference in the what token you get dependent on what percentage of the fractional cards you own? Is like that NFT unique? Like if you're a 40% stakeholder in a card, do you get some sort of a unique token compared to like a 1% stakeholder?
No, they're all equivalent. So like gotcha. that one is just a smaller denomination of the 40. So it'd be the gotcha. Same thing, but Got you bring it. Up a really good point. Wouldn't it be cool? Maybe we do something like if you own a certain percentage, maybe
that's
we,
where my brain's
I don't
going.
Know, you know,
yeah,
we
yeah,
do something. Secondary value in the smart contract, right? We talked a lot about that this last week. And like, there's so much there past just having the, you know, the value of the contract, because there's all this added stuff you can incorporate into that.
Yeah, I won't bore you guys. I wrote like a 10-page like product doc that my whole team's gonna kill me if I bring a new table. But like,
we're just on thinking the same about, page.
Yeah, just thinking about like loyalty, right? And just yeah. like, how do you make this? How do you make fractional special too, right? And like,
yeah,
definitely. What does that mean? There's so many opportunities when it's digital like that. And like, mm-hmm. like I'm even talking about like, let's go get 5 Super Bowl tickets and be like, hey, look, if you're in yeah. this, you got the Super Bowl winning, you know, with the quarterbacks in there. You own X percentage, you're in a raffle or something, and we'll just send you, you know,
something. I love cool. I love the event based stuff, you know, like I think Gary Vee sure. was doing stuff where it's like you can go to any one of his backstage meetings for life or something if you buy this yep. thing. I think that's really cool to add on to the digital aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was actually talking with some of the folks at one, yeah, the guys at 137. We're noodling on POAP, I think is the terminology, but like proof of attendance and mm-hmm. you know, like kind of just loyalty and how do you like. There's just a lot of cool things you can do. I'll leave it at that. And I'm, you know, we'll love to chat later about kind of like what that could look like.
For sure.
Sure. So what are your favorite, some of your favorite cards that are currently on the platform?
Dude, I love the, you know, for one reason or another, I really love that Tyreek Pat Mahomes 101. I mean, yeah. I know it's a 101. I just like the card. I think it's cool. You know, when it came to us, I was like, this is sick. I was like, this is like, I would, you know, and it hasn't been their greatest year ever. And like, I understand that, but regardless, both just monsters.
Absolutely.
You know, we've got some Formula One stuff and Pokemon stuff that's coming on there that like, I don't know what it is. And I was talking on another podcast about the Formula One sets that have been out. I have never had something drive me into watching a sport more than ripping sure. open F1
yeah.
packs. Like,
yeah.
How about you? I didn't watch an F1 race my entire yeah. childhood.
We were just talking about this the other day, weren't we, Dak?
Yeah, I didn't either until we started breaking F1, which mm-hmm. at the time, I think we bought boxes of or just the chrome for like, they came out at like $80, you know, and now they're like two grand or something silly like that, you know, and just, yeah, it drove me totally to watch that Netflix. I was like, and this is awesome, because I wasn't a NASCAR fan and I'm still not a NASCAR fan, but I've been watching the F1. It's fascinating.
It's got a different appeal than NASCAR, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like Definitely. Global, like,
yep.
I don't even know how to put it. Like, it sounds bad to say like this. It just... Watching that series, like now I want to like go check out the race in Singapore and like go like travel to go see these things. Whatever they're doing on the marketing front, this shit's working.
Yeah. Yep.
Certainly for me.
Jet setting thing, you know, it's kind of rad. Yeah.
I agree. Like way out of my budget, but like, you know,
yeah, me too.
In this like this world of me. I'm like,
yeah, some James Bond stuff, you know?
Yeah. So that, and then like, dude, I told you guys before the show, like I love OG Warrior stuff. Clay Steph things are always going to, they're always going to catch my eye. You know, big basketball fan. I mean, baseball, you know, I've learned to appreciate more from a card perspective, never played growing up. So a little bit harder for me to like care as much, but yeah. And then, you know, I think some of the new soccer's weird. I mean, we can talk about that later. Like it's so like not defined going back in time. Right. It's just like kind of everybody's hodgepodging it together. And I wish there was a like, you know, really clear, great lineage of everything and you kind of knew what you're getting yourself into, but I've been following that a lot. I mean, it's obviously going to be huge.
I mean, same thing with us. It was one of the last sports we decided to break, and we break it pretty regularly now, but there's just so many different leagues. And then, you know, there's Tops and Panini, and then there's MLS, and then there's the Euro League, and then there's the La Liga, you know, and then there's World Cup. And so it's very hard to kind of keep up with, but I know I got into the World Cup and that's kind of what I look forward to watch. Cause you know, I can only watch so many sports, you know, I don't have time for all of them, but, you know, starting to get into that and see some of those values of like the old Leo Messi's, the mega cracks or the stickers. And that's basically how Panini got founded. I mean, they just made the stickers for years. And then I guess in other, you know, other overseas in Europe and stuff like that. And Spain, like the sticker books during the World Cup was like, it was like Christmas. It was like everybody did it and everybody built the sticker books for the World Cup to get all of them. Right. And that's how they were able to basically buy out Playoff and Donruss and all that stuff back in 2010, was making the money just from soccer.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. And, you know, we've got a large European contingent on the team. Actually, my co-founder, funny enough, we've literally have not been able to see each other in person. Like we're going to change that shortly since we started this company. Nice. And so he's in he's Sweden now, but he's German by, you know, he's lived in Germany his whole life. And so we get all the soccer stuff from both the Brazil contingency and then the Europe contingency. So, and I'm a huge fan. Like I love watching soccer. I'll watch any international soccer. I don't, again, one of those things that like, I know very little about it, but like I grew up playing FIFA and, you know, broken way too many controllers playing with my brother. And I just, even just like the little like things of people I used to play with, like, you know, trying to collect their stuff. But in any case.
What was your first memory as a child of getting a sports card? What was your first, what stuck out in your mind?
Yeah, so I had a little bit of a weird like upbringing, non-traditional. I actually grew up in Hong Kong, and so my first sports card experience was like my dad, you know, when he would go on business trips back to the US, like we were like so infatuated. It's so weird, like having lived here most of my life and considering myself an American, but like as a kid, America was so cool, and like the NBA and everything else, like we'd go to like the, you know, the little like place where all the American guys got together and my dad would take us. So he would bring back sports cards. And so, you know, it's funny, man, when I was a kid, I have all these photos of like me and Raiders stuff, which is bizarre because like I'm a Niners fan. So like, you know, so I was like, you know, really fat. Like my dad would bring back, you know, football packs. I would imagine like 94, 95 kind of stuff. So that would be the first.
LA Raiders at this time, Doug, correct? Or was that?
I think they were back in. Were they back in Oakland at that time? I have to see that, but yeah, I know they won. I think
it was LA.
Yeah, I want to say that was LA. I'm a Raiders fan, so that's pretty. Speaking of Patrick Mahomes, and you know he didn't look too bad in that game. So,
yeah, well, I mean, you guys just getting the crap end of the stick on all fronts this year. Had a hell of a start.
So that's pretty cool. So Raiders stuff in Hong Kong though, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, bizarre. Yeah, it's so funny. Like that's like this really weirdly specific memory. And then to be honest, man, on the playground and you know in Phoenix where I was going to elementary school, we were massively into trading cards. Like it was like the cool thing to be doing. Like not that I was cool, but like that was what we did. Like Pokemon was like first edition. I wish I had any foresight. I wish my parents were smarter and told me.
Yeah.
I mean, I must have ripped 500 packs of first edition Pokemon. Jeez. You know, I had all these binders. Like, who knows how much money that stuff would be worth today? And it's a long story, but sold it like an a-hole on my way to college and, you know, wanted beer money or whatever and not smart.
Yeah, see, if Pogs ever took off again, I mean, I might have some money.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't think.
Wait,
did you
grow up in the Midwest?
No, I grew up here, the same place I'm at now. And man, we were, I would say seventh or eighth grade. It was like Everybody had all these eight ball slammers and
there were national, you know,
big old things of pogs. I had them too. Yeah, yep. It was crazy.
Yeah.
See, I always used to go play pogs with my like family in the Midwest, and like they were diehard. Like every, like that was it. Like all we did all day was play pogs, and then, you know, got way too competitive on a.
I don't know if I ever learned how to actually play the game. It was just all about the collecting of them, you know, like the slammers and all the different pogs. Like the two.
So you're smart. No, we were like taking the slammers and hitting them as hard.
Oh, really?
Flip them all
That's
over.
What we like, did too. Right. Yeah, we were whoever. If the cards flip over, you keep them, right? So
yeah, okay.
So right. Somebody might have like an 8-pound slammer, and he just takes all your cards.
Yeah,
like,
those things were. Yeah. Yep. That's funny, man. I've talked about pogs forever.
Yeah, I remember being heartbroken. I had to take the public bus, and I had my pogs in my little backpack, and somebody, you know, was behind me, and they took them all. I was like, dang it, you know, so I had to start over again.
Great, dude, it happens.
Great story. But so we mentioned Pokemon. Is there any, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit, is there anything on the horizon for having some Pokemon on the app?
Oh yeah, I wasn't gonna let this company get this far and not get some of that first edition Pokemon stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, it actually works really well with our like whole model. I mean, you've seen it now where you can actually buy player buckets, you know, where you can buy an entire player's collection in one click. You know, especially for people who don't know the specifics of each card and grades and all that stuff. The Pokemon weirdly works pretty well for that, right? Charizard. I mean, how many unique SKUs of Charizard cards have there been since, you know, 94, 95, or 90? I don't. Was it 98 when Pokemon's
99? I think. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, since then, I mean, who knows, right? I actually don't have the number off the top of my head, but there's tons, and we're starting with first edition stuff, but like, you know, we can obviously expand as people want. But 100%, that's en route. I think you'll get a couple other TCGs. Plugged within there. I, you know, I played Magic and
that
played.
I was going to ask about Magic if that was on the plan.
It's a weird collector's item, right? I mean, yeah. they've done a weird job with that particular IP, right? I mean, they've like, you know, they take things out of circulation. You can't play with this thing. You bring this new set.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Pokemon where like they knew this was a collectible thing, right?
Right.
That's coming.
And I'm glad you mentioned the collection thing, which I thought was very cool, you know, is that, and instead of just buying the Luka Prism, I can buy a piece of everything that's in the collection of Luka. Tell us how that idea came to be, and what happens if somebody, if you add more, does a person get a chance to jump back in and buy more?
Yeah, so it's a relatively simple mechanic, right? So we have like a spot market, we've got all these orders, right? And so essentially just imagine like a math, you know, basically just grabbing. So if you take if I want to buy $100 of a Luka, of Luka's collection, right? You're just going into these orders and you're just putting 100 based on proportional values of the cards and what's available. And you're basically scooping them all up. So you get all those cards, but no. So when a new card gets added, your actual Luka collection and your account is specific to you. The full Luka collection can be added to at times. So like it's a spot, like whatever that moment in time is a snapshot, right? So
gotcha.
I don't know how we could do it in a way where we could add things and then like you would incrementally just like get it. I mean, it'd be kind of interesting to find some way to do that. But,
like a stock split or something, you know what I mean? But yeah, it might be if you're adding.
Or it's just any new card with that relative data gets tied in somehow, right? Through some sort of like, I mean, I say hashtag, but that's probably not the way that would work on that end, but some way through the blockchain so that it keeps just being put into the same group.
Well, I mean, one way you could do it, right, is like your aggregate percentage of like the Luka collection. If we add a new card, maybe you get the right to buy, you know, whatever percentage of that next card in.
Yeah, there you go.
The only thing is then you know, it's a little bit of a messaging nightmare. But yeah, so the collection at its simplest form, right, is, again, some people are fans of these people, right? And the cards underlying them, they're learning about. And it's such a good way to get people to learn about cards because now all of a sudden they're like, oh, I have this Luka Silver Prism and it's, you know, a PSA 9 or a PSA 10 or whatever. And like, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, yeah, I bought Luka, but like, actually now I'm diving in. And so we feel like as much as some people are like, oh, like you hate cardboard. I'm like, hey, we definitely don't hate cardboard. Our whole business exists on cardboard right now, right? Sure. Like this, that's not the case. What we want to do is bring tons of like new people in who would never otherwise take the time, effort and energy to do it in a different world, you know, and in the eBay more traditional kind of routes.
Are you guys, I know you guys have a ton of users already. Do you guys have an age demographic that's more popular than another age demographic?
So, I mean, it's 18 over, right? So like you have to be an adult to be on the application. I would say it skews younger than like what I would say, like when I go to the national, right? I don't know what you'd peg the average age at. I'd probably put it somewhere around early 50s, maybe a little
bit
higher.
It's gotten younger. Last year it was younger, but the year before you're maybe 60. But yeah, 50 to 60 was definitely the OGs that were hanging out around there.
So the cool thing is we do actually have like a lot of like, you know, college aged folks in there. And then I would say, you know, it's interesting. You get a lot of younger people in. Obviously, like budgets tend to be smaller, just that's how life works. But really active, really interested. And then it spans though. I mean, we have people of all ages, right? I would say that the concentration is probably 25 to 40 of you know, the most of them.
That's a beautiful thing. Cause I mean, I think 5-6 years ago, we were all talking about how do we, like, we, you know, I'm going to be 40 this year, but we were like the young generation and nobody below us was really interested in it at all. And it was always a dilemma of like, how are these guys going to get involved? And it's stuff like what you guys are doing that's making it easier. That's like, you know, all app based, that's bringing in this new younger generation of collectors. And it's just a great thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, to put that in perspective, right? More kids today play Fortnite than football and baseball combined, right? So, yep. And they're spending their money on skins and Fortnite stuff, right? So if the industry doesn't like evolve, right, and it's not taking cardboard out of it, but like, I feel like things like Dibs and there's other platforms emerging where they can get involved in these cool things that are relevant to them, but they also spend so much damn time, screen time, right? Like, yeah, that's where exactly they're at, and that's how they're flexing, and that's how they're showcasing what they've got and who they are and all that stuff, right? And so if you don't make that meaningful bridge into this world that they live in, right, it's going to be really hard to keep them in the space. And I think that all of us want the hobby to continue. We all love it. Like, we all want all these, you know, there's tons of different veins of this. But I think it's going to evolve over time, right? It's not even just like cardboard versus digital and all of that. I think, you know, esports is going to play a role that like the three of us may not really understand. Right. And like, that's right. Okay. But you know, it was weird for me at first when I first got into like the gaming world. It was always kind of like, why do you watch somebody else play video games? But then I'm like sitting there on TV watching somebody else play basketball. What the shit is the difference? Like, yeah, at least they're playing video games 8 hours a day. Like, I haven't shot a basketball in months, you know, like in some respects, it's actually almost more authentic that they're watching some Twitch streamer play the game that they're spending a lot of time playing. Right. And
yeah,
I think it's just that gap, right? Like, when you didn't grow up doing it and you didn't grow up doing this, that, or the other, it's just, it takes a second to like, to feel it. And I think being around younger kids too, like nieces, nephews, whatever it may be, like, it's crazy. It's just so different. And I learned a ton being around that.
Absolutely. And I think it all being in the digital space, there's such exciting stuff for, you know, NFTs and what you're doing to cross-pollinate with crypto gaming down the line someday, right? It's all sports. It's all in the same space. You're right. The future generation, Gen Z and beyond, they all look at it as being in the same space. There's not all these buckets that everything sits in anymore.
Totally.
It's all metaverse. It's all the same deal. And so like that to me provides some really exciting opportunities for everybody to perpetuate the community as well as just, you know, advanced new stuff.
And have you guys ever thought about carrying wax, like sealed wax as well? Like, you know, maybe like an 03, 04 Chrome box, or, you know, even going older and maybe 86, 87 Fleer.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm like, are you guys getting fed notes here?
No.
So yeah, there'll be, we had a planned drop that we're going to do recently and we pushed it off. But yeah, no, I think wax is actually a fantastic idea. You know, it would be really cool to like even like partner with somebody like you guys, like too, if like everybody who bought into that wax, like, I don't know, get all the cards out. It's a little bit convoluted because we have to grade it all, but like, I don't know, there's something there, and it's obviously an incredible vehicle, right? I mean, like, you know, looking at what wax does, even in the short term, is kind of scary. Long term, it's even more ridiculous. So I think it's a really interesting proposition. So I think we're going to definitely get wax from all sorts of years, generations, really important key sets, and try to get multiples of them. Not cheap, obviously. So trying to find the right partners on that front is always important.
I got some 03, 04 Chrome, maybe for the, you know, right opportunity. and so we've been learning to hold on to some. You know, we break 99% of everything that we have because that's our marketplace, obviously. And if we're not opening cards for people, then we don't have people. But, you know, here and there we try to make investments on that kind of stuff, you know, and put it away. And Dream about opening it every day, but you know, resisting the urge.
Yeah, it's weird. I was literally thinking the other day about, I know it's an astronomical, like it's probably way too high price for that 0304 box, but like that is so like my, like I grew up watching LeBron play in high school. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
As a fan, probably have gotten a little bit away from it as I've gotten older, but it doesn't matter. Like that is so nostalgic for me. That whole generation, that whole draft class, like all those, like that was, yeah, no, I love that box.
Yeah. And it kind of ushered into what we collect today, right? Cause you know, the 86, 87 Fleer is iconic, but you didn't have refractors. You didn't have golds. You didn't have X-fractors, you know, it just kind of, it was like kind of the jump to where we're now collecting prisms and things like that.
I have a quick question. Speaking of wax, you'd mentioned when we started that you guys were actually, you were part of creating Wax.io. Is that correct? Okay. So, cause I was going to ask why go to that blockchain as opposed to others that are able to produce NFTs?
Yeah. So, you know, myself, we have other team members that were deeply involved in projects either directly with that blockchain or ancillarily. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Wax is interesting for a multitude of reasons. So look, we actually initially built all of our smart contracts work on Solidity as well. Okay. So any EVM, you know, Ethereum, otherwise, channels. The funny thing is the cost got so high to take a physical item, right? And we were doing things of, you know, we have cards that are $500 or less, right?
Sure.
I'm going to pay more in gas fees to mint that thing, generally speaking, the smart contract, and then fractionalize it, right? We have like a multi-step process. Like it ends up being, could be well over $1,000 just to simply get this thing on the blockchain. And I'm hoping with like V2 and some of the upgrades that are coming to Ethereum, it'll make sense. With higher dollar stuff, it still makes sense. Mm-hmm. What I think, you know, Wax is really, really fast, really cheap, really easy. We also knew it well. We had support there. But I think long-term, like just the way we're thinking about this too, is like, we're blockchain agnostic, right? Like frankly speaking, like if you want to take a card off dibs, like my goal is, you know, in the not very distant future is, dude, if you want to take it to Ethereum, go for it.
Right.
We'll burn it, remint it on Ethereum and it's yours.
Yeah, I think that's super important.
If you want to take it to Flow and, you know, get into the Top Shot game, right? Like let's do it. For us, it's just more of like, hey, look, we need to get these things on here. We need to start doing all these different things. The smart contracts are, you know, few of them are, I mean, we're going to support multiple chains just to be clear. Mm-hmm. And we really want optionality, especially with the physical things, right? Because, you know, at the end of the day, right, if you're sending me something, who am I to tell you what blockchain you're going to mint it on, right? Like we'll give you all the right details and you can always come get that thing from us and our vaulting partners. But like, hey, maybe you like, I don't know, whatever chain it is that you follow and like, right? So that's, we want to give you, we want to be the gateway, but like, we also want the optionality for you guys. We're not going to be prescriptive over, and it's also hard to pick winners. Like, yeah, obviously Ethereum's like this massive
that's
dominant.
What's going through my head. Yeah. But you're right. You don't know, right? I mean, who knows?
No. And if we like, you know, if we had built a blockchain like Dibs blockchain or something, then obviously I'd be like, hey, I'd really want you on Dibs blockchain, but like, hey, we've done that before. We didn't want to do it again. Although, you know, it can be incredibly lucrative. But in any case, yeah, we're agnostic to that.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, and this is my personal opinion, but I think that that's the smart way to do it. I think that folks that try to have exclusivity to a certain blockchain to be part of their product or their release or whatever are kind of missing the nature of what this thing is going to be eventually. So I think that's a good call for sure.
Yeah. And so it'll either be a concept of like, you know, having some sort of smart contract that burns and mints, right? So you don't have a double spend problem. Mm-hmm. Or you can do wrapped stuff, right? I mean, you've seen that all the time in the DeFi space. Like, you know, you can be on Ethereum network trading wrapped Bitcoin. I think it's like probably the most traded currency there, right? Mm-hmm. Even though it's not like a ETH native thing. So I think the whole industry, you know, something I've been a part of for a long time, it's going to become more seamless to go from one chain to another is my belief.
Right. Interesting.
Definitely. I mean, I think at some point they're already coming out with some wallets, right? That you can, you know, and stores are starting to accept. I mean, I know there's already Bitcoin ATMs, and I think some places are starting to take ETH. I'm talking about more of a physical presence. So it'll be interesting to see when people have these little digital wallets walking around, being able to pay for things. It'd be pretty exciting.
Bitcoin ATMs have been around for a while, but it's the thing I was at Bitcoin ATM is cards and coffee in.
We were thinking about getting one in our store too.
Yeah, do it. I mean, why not? I mean, they've gotten it down to a science. I mean, it used to be pretty wild. I think you could just like show up, like insert your key and like pull out cash, which obviously has, you know, government implications, but yeah. Now you're going to start to see these things be usable, right? I mean, I don't know that Bitcoin makes a ton of sense to be the mechanism for buying, you know, shit at 7-Eleven, but you know, maybe there's some way to wrap it and use some other layer to it. In any case, longer discussion to be had there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like we had our NFT podcast, and I'm, you know, I've been investing in crypto and taking some of the money that I was investing in stocks, putting in crypto, and watching that gain faster. So it's just definitely a fascinating subject to get into. And the fact that it's just like you guys, it's 24/7 marketplace, right? Stocks close; they're not open on holiday. They're only open until, you know, 5 o'clock, and you know, this is a completely open marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, the traditional financial instruments and sectors, right? Like it's not that like stocks are bad, right? It's just like, you know, this is a really like old school way of thinking about things, right? And like, sure, they've digitized it. You got E-Trade and, you know, whatever brokerage account is pretty simple, Robinhood. But I do think the 24/7 nature of it all, right? Like all of these different things, like the world's got to take a big look at that, right? And like for us, like in the space that we want to bring it to is the same, it's really a similar concept, right? Where, you know, like, yeah, fine. 10 years ago, 5 years ago, this stuff didn't maybe even matter. And certainly wasn't possible to do it in the way we're doing it today. But, you know, in the future, taking your physical things and putting them into an ecosystem that lives with you and travels with you and everything you want to kind of like represent. And that's,
It doesn't take holidays and it doesn't go offline. I think it's not going to be that long before a couple generations from now, people are going to be like, you mean the stock market closes? Like, why? Yeah. Why does it close? Like, what do you mean it's on East Coast US time? Like, you know, I just, yeah, that I agree.
100%. Yeah. And then maybe in like 50 years, we'll have like a renaissance. Everyone's like, oh my God, we all work too much and we'll go back to like five markets. But, you know, I don't know.
For sure. It's all cyclical. We're going to, yep, for sure.
Taking months off at a time. Everybody's forced to do that.
Yeah.
Siestas.
I like that.
Now, you mentioned you're a basketball fan. How exciting was it to have Kevin Love and CP3 and Channing Frye invest in the company?
I mean, dude, it's so cool for me. I mean, Channing's funny. Like I actually used to, when I was a kid growing up playing basketball, I used to go watch Channing in high school and college when I was living in Phoenix at the time. To answer your question, it's like, I don't know, man, I'm like a kid in a candy store. Like this,
yeah,
so fun. Like this whole being able to do this, like the last year and a half, you know, I was talking to my co-founder, I mean, you just like have to pinch yourself, like how crazy life can get in such a short period of time. And all of a sudden you pick up phone calls from people that like, you know, you never thought you would. But the coolest thing about it, man, is most, you know, most athletes and people we've interacted with have been so cool. Like you get them in a one-on-one setting and, you know, Channing's you probably see him as an analyst. That dude is hilarious, like super smart. Really, really interesting person. And he was actually one of our very, very early pre-Series A investors. Him, Doug Sanders, his agent, connected us to a bunch of these folks. You know, they've all got really cool collecting stories. And I don't want to, like, we'll do some content around this, but they're genuinely, like, all these guys, like, have a collecting story. It's almost impossible to be a pro athlete and not think about this, right? Some of these ones are, like, Chris Bryant in particular, really, really funny and interesting. And it's, like, a current thing. You know, I know CP's family's been collecting like his stuff since the day he was like, even in like college, like I think his dad, there's a story around that. And Kevin Love has like a really sick collection from what I understand. Yeah. So yeah, we're going to try to bring some of that content to life here in the near future. Just finally brought on a person to kind of be the front woman to run content for us. And yeah, you'll see a lot of that shortly.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a huge Chris Bryant fan. I actually got the opportunity to break with him when he was still a prospect, when Panini brought me out to spring training and I opened some National Treasures baseball at the time with him, and just one of the nicest guys. And then I happened to meet him at a couple different Transcendent events, Tops events, and just like the nicest guy in the world. So, and then I hear he goes into some card shops in LA and buys some cards now. So, and he's a Giant, which made it even better for me. I was like, oh my God, now he's a Giant. So just one.
Yeah, there's
one
a cool story guys. About that first game in Giants in the Giants Stadium where he hit a home run. I don't know if it was first at bat or not, but
yep.
There's a card breaking story before that.
Oh, really? Nice. We'll have to tune into the content.
Yeah,
a little tease, a little segue there, right there. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to you guys are going to give away some free packs, some of the frack packs for signing up for Dibs. Nice. So when you guys are signing up, use code MOJOBREAK, and that'll get you a free fractionals pack of intro cards, which would be awesome. So definitely jump on that one, guys. Like I said, the app is awesome, super easy to use. You know, and maybe you'll buy one of my cards or join some of the collections that that are on there. It's definitely fascinating to see the leaderboard and the amount of money and then the cards. And you know, it's just it's very, very modern and very cool to bring it into this this digital world. So, Evan, we don't want to take any more of your time, and we appreciate you having you on, and look forward to spending some more of my money on these cards, man.
Hey, man, it's been a blast, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. Oh, Have a good one.
Cheers.
All right, guys, that concludes our interview with Evan Vandenberg. We had a great conversation, as you can see. Make sure you guys download the app and use that code MOJOBREAK when signing up. Once again, MOJOBREAK as one word, and that'll get you that free frack pack. And comment below on your experience with the app and what you think, what they can do to make it better, because these guys – like they said in the interview, they're reaching out to customers. They want to know how to improve their marketplace. And I think this is a very, very valuable asset to this hobby, and it allows you to do it in the palm of your hand or at the at your computer desk. So once again, dibs.io and Dibs in the Marketplace. The app is phenomenal, and it's great to just join and try and get your free frack pack. So do that now. And also make sure you subscribe here at Mojo Break Media for other great content.